Hey, welcome back to the Hockey Free For All podcast. I am your host, Steven Stiles, and we are back with episode 103, part two. I ended up having to make two parts out of episode 103. They just kind of had that kind of style and theme to them and things like that. So let's not hesitate. Two stories that I talked about in episode 103, part one, that have gotten more and more interesting is now the Pittsburgh Penguins regarding all the coaching uncertainty and the power struggles that seem to exist between Dubas and his coaching staff. Todd Reirden has been fired in Pittsburgh, and that cannot be a good thing for Mike Sullivan long term. They were very close. They liked working together. They kind of had a cohesion on a coaching staff that not every coaching staff has. Carl Dubas has exercised his authority and might just have caused a greater problem. Stay tuned for that one. And the Boston Bruins in a dramatic win in Game 7 in a 2-1 overtime. And what's funny about that series is the player that scored the overtime game goal is David Pastrnak, who was just called out by the head coach. He's obviously playing very well and didn't really need to be called out by the coach. So that was great to see David Pastrnak score that goal. That being said, that was one of the other coaching changes. Now it's going to be interesting to see in Toronto how things shake out. Don't think there'll be any upper management changes, but does the coaching staff stay? Does one of the big three, like I said in episode 103, part one, is it Mitch Marner that takes the hit on that? William Nylander seemed to have a very good playoffs. Auston Matthews played injured, so that's kind of his get-out-of-jail-free card, if you will. Although he certainly doesn't need one with the regular season and what he means to that team. So one has to wonder what's going to happen in Toronto. And there's also a lot of bottom six forwards on that roster that were signed for 1 year. So it's going to be interesting to see how that team evolves in the offseason. And as we're talking about offseason and teams, let's get right into a situation with Montreal. Loved this article. This was hilarious. Time for some spending in Montreal. Why? And for who? Again, still in a rebuild, still putting the pieces together, still not done, not going to probably be a contender, although in 2024-2025, if you think about the fact that Montreal had 44 one-game goals this year, literally their opposition outscored them by one goal 44 times. If Kirby Doc was in that lineup this year, would they have been a playoff team this year? One can guess endlessly. Who knows? I say yes, but given the fact he'll be back next year, I think they got a legit shot at making the 2024-2025 playoffs. That being said, it still does not call or require or somehow create the need for spending in Montreal. Number one, they still don't have a ton of money on the cap to spend. Number two, and more importantly than anything else, and I have relentlessly talked about this in episodes, they have got everybody that they need internally between the young players on the roster already and the young prospects that are continuing to come in and flood that organization with talent. It's just unbelievable. And this time around, people are like, oh, Jake DeBrusque is going to be a free agent in Boston. That's exactly the kind of player Montreal needs. No, they don't. No, they don't. Just because these players play well elsewhere that seems to make them attractive for someone's team that they believe needs those players doesn't necessarily pay off or play out that way all the time. And again, these players are going to require large contracts. Montreal has done an amazing job at digging itself out of dead weight, useless contracts that were signed by previous management groups. They've weeded that out at a tremendously effective way and quickly as well. On top of that, the next free agent on that list is Anthony Duclair. No idea why people would think he should come to Montreal at his age. Gotta be, again, we're back to the hometown province, French-speaking player. Not a valid reason to bring somebody back. It's just not. And that brings me to Teuvo Teräväinen. Everybody's like, oh, he's a great player from Carolina. We should get him in the free agents offseason. No, No, you shouldn't. Just like last week, in episode 103, part 1, we talked about Montreal doesn't need the return of Sean Monahan. Montreal doesn't need the return of Tyler Toffoli. Montreal doesn't need these players either. Again, Montreal has everything internally within its organization. It doesn't need to shop around. It is just an obsession that I don't understand that's out there of people that apparently want to just sign everybody. And again, one of the things that I've talked about in the past is every NHL club has a maximum of 50 contracts that it can extend to players at any given time. So if you're even for a year wrapping up free agents in contracts that you have a limitation of, and it happens to be a year that you got to sign one of your prospects by the June or August deadline time, guess what? You lose the prospect for nothing. You don't have any ability to sign them. Now, there's cool ways to work around that, which Montreal's also been very creative with as far as like signing just AHL contracts, but those players can't come up to the NHL. So why would Montreal do that with free agents? That's not going to help them with that. And why would they stunt the growth of their prospects? It's just amazing to me the amount of people, and let's not forget this one. I love this one in particular. People are talking about how Montreal should trade Jordan Harris, Jaden Struble, and the 2024 first round pick that they acquired from Winnipeg for Columbus Blue Jackets center prospect Kent Johnson. Two problems with that. One, the Winnipeg draft choice now is a much more interesting pick, being that they've been eliminated by the Colorado Avalanche. So it's a mid first round rather than a very late first round, as previously thought that it might be. And number two, and most importantly, Nick Suzuki, Kirby Doc, Owen Beck, take your pick as the fourth center. And by the way, even before Owen Beck at number three, Alex Newhook could be another center. I personally think he's a wing. Some other people think he's a center. Hey, whatever you decide there, you got that option. And you've got a host of other options. Where are you going to put Kent Johnson? And why would you trade two promising young defensive prospects that have, in my opinion, already proven their value and their worth to the roster by playing a couple of years, in the case of Jordan Harris, this year, 40-plus games by Jaden Struble, and give up a first-round pick for somebody who was a previously top three pick that hasn't shown anything? Unlike Kirby Doc, because everyone's like, well, Kirby Doc was a third overall pick in his draft. Yeah, but he showed something. There was something there of interest to garner a trade and belief that he could turn into and be a very talented player. Kent Johnson hasn't shown that. The Columbus Blue Jackets don't really have a great track record of drafting. They really don't. A lot of their draft picks have either just vaporized and become nothing, or demanded a way out of the city. And I'm not going to rehash all those players, but that's a lot of what has happened to their picks. It's not a good track record. You don't need to acquire anybody from Columbus. I wish Columbus well, but I don't want any of their players. And a little recap here. Again, you've got the possibilities of, and very good number one, two, and three lines of, Joshua Roy on right wing, Nick Suzuki at center, Cole Caulfield on the left wing. Line two, Alex Newhook at right wing, Kirby Doc at center, Yurav Slavkovsky on the left wing. And before anybody strokes out, Yurav Slavkovsky started on that line and would have stayed on that line all year long had Doc not get injured. Yes, he looked great with Cole Caulfield and Nick Suzuki, but he looked even better with Newhook and Doc. Then line three gets you Philip Massar, Owen Beck, and Sean Farrell. Now, let's move in the 2024 draft there for a second and make one change to that. So instead of Joshua Roy being on the first line with Nick Suzuki and Cole Caulfield, Montreal has Ivan Demidov drop in their lap, the Russian winger. He becomes your first line right winger with Nick Suzuki and Cole Caulfield, and Joshua Roy drops to the third line and becomes either the right or most likely left winger on that line, and Sean Farrell, quote unquote, isn't quite ready yet. That's a hell of a top nine in either case. And your fourth line options are limitless because Montreal has always had an amazing amount of bottom six player prospects. And I don't say that like, oh, well, you know, they never drafted or had very good prospects. They're always at the bottom six. No, they've always had a tremendous talent pool for line four role players, which most line four players are role players. That's not an insult. That's fact. And you've got a plethora of talent there. I don't understand the desire for everybody to sit there and go, oh, well, Montreal needs fill in the blank, whoever that is, from whatever team that is. No, They don't. And just to wrap up this acquisition to Montreal, gotta have, oh my God, I actually saw people excited of, Montreal can bring back Max Pacioretty from Washington this offseason. No, thank you. First of all, he's not the player he was when he was younger. In Montreal or in Vegas, either way, he has a horrific injury past since leaving Montreal and wasn't that great in Montreal either. And he's at the back end of his career, very much in the twilight years. There's very little left. Montreal, on top of all of that, also doesn't need the previous disruption to the locker room, which created the whole PK Subban versus Max Pacioretty. Brendan Gallagher got involved. Why would you bring that kind of disruption back to a team? Are you insane? Why would you fracture a extremely well-working scenario now to sit there over nostalgia and go, oh, but Max could come back? And just as bad as that, just like we were talking about Kent Johnson from the Columbus Blue Jackets, everybody's like, oh, Montreal can now get Capo Caco from the New York Rangers. No, they can't. They don't need him. Again, I'm much more excited, and he's a right winger, much more excited with Philip Massar, Joshua Roy, possibilities of Ivan Demidov, Alex Newhook. Montreal's good. They've got talent already and don't need a head case. And now moving on to the playoffs in the final series to complete itself in the first round, Vancouver moves on from the Nashville Predators. It's been a really, really interesting first round of playoffs to watch, from the teams that have come out of it that maybe weren't expected to the very either blowout 4-1, 4-0 series types, to the very competitive game sevens. It's been a really, really fun first round series to watch. And it's set up a heck of a second round set of series. It should be equally as interesting to watch the second round, which kicks off with the Boston Bruins and the Florida Panthers. And I would think right now, this is the Panthers series to win. I would say Florida should be the heavy odds on favorite. Sometimes that doesn't work out really well for teams, but I think Florida has Boston's numbers for this series. That being said, Boston is just a never say die team and can always pull it out, but Florida going into it has got to look like the favorite. Hey, that wraps up episode 103, part 2 of the Hockey Free For All podcast. I'm your host, Steven Stiles. Have an amazing upcoming week.